Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We get together here once a week at KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa, underneath the Ames Pantorium dry cleaner sign. Yes, this building is a historic building, and we are right here on Douglas Avenue. This is a great studio. This is a great radio station. Welcome. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Yes, the Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Thanks to our supporters. Thanks to you, our listener. Welcome to our kitchen table today. We are going to consider breakfast today. Much depends on breakfast. Yes, it does. First off, I want to note that fall is here. We kind of have these need to put on a sweater in the morning, in the evening here and in the early morning. And although it's raining today, it kind of feels like a fall rain. It does. And we're sliding past the equinox here. The moon has been absolutely beautiful.
It was full last night.
I've noticed the first fall colors just kind of coming on little ends of bushes and trees. Maybe I'm pushing things, but it's there if you look for it.
I'm sort of still holding my breath.
Oh, good for you. You're kinda...
I like my summer swimming, and that's going to go pretty soon.
It is. Plus, you've got a couple of tomatoes to get ripe in your backyard.
Oh, yeah. We're working on them. Ooh. The garden is still, it's still trudging along there.
It is trudging. This past weekend, in downtown Ames, there was the Octagon Art Festival. That happens every year. I think there were 100 artists set up their wares all along Main Street, and there were food trucks and lots of fun things. There was music, and KHOI Radio. We set up a little booth out in front of our studio here, and people came by and said hi. Thanks to all of you who did. And I've kind of been at this booth during past art festivals, and the first couple times I did that, people would say, "What? Community radio? Never heard of such a thing." And I must report that I greeted people and told them who I was and asked if they wanted more information. And two-thirds or even more than that would say, "Oh, I already know. I already listened to you guys." So thank you to all you people out there.
Yeah, well, we've been here 5 years. It's about time we were accepted into the community.
Now, either they listen or they have somebody they know listens, which is okay.
It's okay. The buzz is happening.
It is. And like you said, we've been doing our show for 5 years. The radio station's been around for 6. It's really nice to be part of such a good thing. And I mentioned there were food trucks on Main Street this Sunday. Ice cream. There was a good ice cream truck. That's kind of become one of my traditions. Before you go and look at any of that art stuff, go to the Sweet Treats truck and get yourself some ice cream.
Well, there's nothing more. And the weather was perfect. So strolling around, eating ice cream, looking at all these fine crafts people's displays. It was lovely. Lovely, lovely.
It was, too. Well, much depends on breakfast. Don and I, that came up in conversation this past week, and we said, we should do a breakfast show, so that's what this one is. And then we said, now, who said that? Who said much depends on breakfast? So we start
Well, Lana Noctigal said, much depends on breakfast.
I guess I must be the one that said much depends on breakfast, because I looked it up. That sounds so familiar. And I was looking breakfast quotes, and it must be Dorothy Parker. Ah, so I looked up Dorothy
Parker. She said everything.
Oh, she said
on
everything
planet,
so
right?
well. She said a lot of good stuff. Matter of fact, so I looked up. This has nothing to do with breakfast, but I did find some quotes, and I think the best one that I found is her epitaph, which is on a plaque near her grave. Near her grave, it says, "Excuse my dust." But Dorothy Parker didn't say much depends on breakfast. And I found some other breakfast quotes, but no. And so Donna finds out it's not breakfast that much depends on.
Well, I kind of was Googling around, and at first I thought, well, I've seen that sort of much depends. In fact, I think at one of the original early Whole Foods, they had that, like, painted on the wall. But it turns out it is much depends on dinner.
And
guess who said it?
It comes from...
Not Dorothy Parker.
The English poet, Lord George Gordon Byron. He is best known to foodies as the source of that quotation. The quotation is from his book, The Island, and the full stanza reads, "All human history attests that happiness for man, the hungry sinner, since Eve ate apples, much depends on dinner."
There you go.
We got that cleared up, still.
The point is, eating is important, right?
Right.
To all of us.
And so we were thinking about breakfast here, and... Donna and I took a road trip.
Yeah, we had a little excursion around town. So we went out to, you know, I've got in my notes, I don't have the address written down, but it's been renamed the Filling Station. So it's at University near Highway 30, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's the Phillips 66 station has a convenience store, but it is the convenience store with a twist. We have upgraded our concepts of convenience stores in Ames. So I think they've been doing the Burgies coffee roasting there for a long time. So everybody kind of knew there was more than just, gasoline and crackers going on there or something. So they recently did some kind of renovation and it's very pleasant. So they have a little breakfast and lunch starting at 6 a.m., I believe. Restaurant at the end of the convenience store. And the convenience store also is light and lovely, has some, has a walk-in beer cooler. It has some organic it has the usual things plus, okay?
Right.
Plus all of the Burgies coffee, plus homemade pastries.
So right. You walk in and you don't have kind of the questionable looking donuts sitting there.
There's a full-on pastry case.
They've got a bakery there. Uh-huh. And there's really good food there. My only regret is that this filling station place is not on my way to some place because you're driving along and I go to visit family in Wisconsin every now and then. You pull over and you get a little peckish driving, and you go in and you just don't want, they could get a pack of Twizzlers or some licorice or something but you go in here and there is a good, there's actual chefs there. There's people and there's bakers there. And so we had breakfast.
It is a nice design. So there's the cooking line with the young gentleman running that. And then there's a big picture window. And behind it, you see the bakers. They make their own bread. They make their own pastries. They make their own cookies. And, of course, this also, Burgies has a couple of other venues. I think they have the concession at Mary Greeley.
Ah, that's
and
right.
Then they have that other coffee place out by Lowe's. So at this location, called the Filling Station, they make all the handmade breads. So, and the gentlemen running it are Spencer Cruz and Dion Harden and also Alec Thompson. So three young gentlemen that graduated from Ames High School, class of 2008, 2009, and I think Alex might be a tad older, but the boys all knew each other in school from playing sports together, and now they have a little business.
And it's lovely. You look up on the board, and they had wonderful breakfast. I like biscuits and gravy, and guess what? They had biscuits and gravy, and they were that's what I had, and it was
for their really good. On their breakfast menu. It was really good. So the breakfast menu. Where did I put the bread? Oh yeah, the biscuits and gravy, the three egg omelet, breakfast sandwich. I had the buttermilk pancakes. I'm telling you, it was so big I could only eat about half of it.
Yeah, I believe the term might be instead of bringing it out on a plate, there was like these trenchers, these large plates.
Yeah, very,
that came, oh boy,
very substantial portions. And of course, they have a smoker there, so they are like the lunch menu, which is a lot of sandwiches and smoked salmon burger, pulled pork, smoked brisket. And they're making their own pork tenderloins, like breaded, tenderized. What did they do? They season it themselves, and then they put the crust on. I'm going to have to go back and have one of those soon.
We hardly had room for lunch after finishing breakfast. So, that's good.
It was a delight.
And things that you can...
Not dinner, just breakfast and lunch.
Breakfast and lunch, although they have like a deli case there. And it's nice
to
know.
Yeah, they have a big to-go case.
You can go in and get this to-go stuff that looks like, oh, it's not too bad looking there. Good job, guys.
No, it's a lovely space for eating, and big communal table plus some other little tables. It's nice and white and light and airy. And they also do catering. So they have boxed lunches and breakfast burritos to go, and you can order in for your party or your event, and you can either pick it up or they deliver. So it's a nice addition to in town for options for eating, and I have to say very reasonably priced.
And of course, good coffee.
Good coffee. So this comes to you from the Berge family.
The filling station.
Yep.
And yes, you can fill up your car at the same time. So, breakfast for your car and breakfast for you. Yeah. Oh, here. Since I was trundling around not finding my Dorothy Parker quote, I did find some good quotes anyway about breakfast. People wax eloquent about lots of things. So Winston Churchill said, "My wife and I tried two or three times in the last 40 years to have breakfast together, but it was so disagreeable we had to stop." Yeah, being in a good mood in the morning, not everybody is. I think that's what coffee is for. Yes, it is.
Isn't that true?
And here's one from Amy Vanderbilt, who says, "Breakfast is the one meal at which it is permissible to read the paper."
Now, of course, she didn't say that you can read the paper on your iPad or something, but...
Well, she probably could do that. Yeah, okay.
And you don't have to put your device away for breakfast, apparently.
Oh,
okay.
I guess so.
Okay.
And here's one from a man named Fred Sherrill. "When you have bacon and eggs for breakfast, the chicken makes a contribution. The pig makes a commitment."
Yeah.
There are lots of different options for breakfast. People have all kinds of things you eat. Although we say the word breakfast, I think we all have our own idea of what a good breakfast is. But
it's a habit meal, I think.
Yeah, it is.
And a comfort meal for
it's
sure.
A comfort meal for sure.
If it's anything more than that, it goes to brunch, which is a whole different... Whole different ball game.
That has a lot more visiting with it.
Yes. So breakfast is what you do in the morning when you just like are trying to reorient to reality,
that's true.
Right?
Brunch is mimosas. Breakfast is orange juice. That, you know, you've got to draw the line someplace,
yeah, yeah,
Donna.
Yeah, yeah,
Donna, you brought a really nice book in,
I have an old friend from California who I have to say was probably had the first organic restaurant in California. Her name is Jessie Cool, and she has near Stanford University. She opened something called Flea Street Cafe, and I've done a lot of organic cooking and spent much fun time with her in the kitchen. She has a number of books out, but this one little one, it's almost 20 years old. I hate to say it. You probably can't even find it anymore. It's called Breakfast in Bed. 90 recipes for creative indulgences. And she's a good recipe writer. What I really like most about this book is, she divides the kind of breakfast options into, there's a chapter with fruits, including, a fresh fruit omelet, which I had forgotten about. I used to make that years ago. You make your regular omelet or even scrambled eggs, and you drop some fresh berries into it. For children, sometimes you can put bananas even. But fresh fruit. And not too much, but just a tad bit of sugar. Just like if you're doing like a three-egg omelet, you want maybe a scant teaspoon of sugar. You don't want it to be sloppy sweet, but just a little bit sweet, to, especially if you're using berries that are a little bit tart. It is delightful.
I have never tried that.
Especially in fruit season. Huh. Easy peasy. Then she does eggs, which everybody would expect, but she's got some interesting omelets. Things like tomato, avocado, and basil omelet over grilled bread, steamed eggs with quick ranchero sauce. This omelet making gives you, and this is what I love about breakfast. You can get in a rut, but there's so many quick and easy things to do. Eggs are just like sublime for the quick fix. Yeah, then she lists spoon foods, right? Which, of course, is things like oatmeal and stuff like that. But she's got some other things here. Polenta with maple syrup and mascarpone. Fig and goat cheese pudding with raspberries. Grits with brie, green garlic, and asparagus. And here's the favorite. This is truly comfort food. Homemade chicken broth, right? Then you float a piece of toast in it and just sprinkle Italian cheese on it.
For breakfast?
Yeah. Well, broth is really, it's what you used to give people who were ill. It's also a wonderful way to start your digestion in the morning, if you've just got it.
It sounds like a winter thing.
It could be. In fact, there's an old Italian thing. What's it called? Brodo is the Italian word for broth. And I think you just have a good portion, a big bowl of broth, any animal variety, and then you just float some pasta in it and throw the cheese on it. That's a very classic Italian thing. Mm. Then Jesse, of course, breaks down pancakes and waffles. Uh-huh. That's, when you're a little more awake, I think.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you're dealing with, yeah. Yeah.
And then the standard baked goods, which you can always do the night before, the scones and biscuits and that sort of thing. And so she just, as usual, throws some nice creative curves in there and makes you want to have a little bit nicer breakfast for yourself sometimes.
Yeah, breakfast and
this one is called breakfast in bed. So
that's if you have staff, I think.
Well, or if you have a willing partner with a special occasion, for breakfast or Mother's Day.
Birthdays
or Mother's Day.
Yeah, for breakfast, do it up nicely. Yeah. Do it up nice. I like a variety of things for breakfast. Sometimes I'll get the bowl of cooked cereal, or sometimes I like eggs. Sometimes I like buckwheat pancakes.
Buckwheat anything. Yeah. Buckwheat anything.
I don't like the same thing every morning, but I always start the day with coffee, which is...
Well, I think I'm sort of in a rut right now. I definitely have to have coffee. And the only places I've been... And then I usually do a toast and a jam. So that's where I switch it up because, like Nate at Wheatsfield makes all kinds of different breads. So I have different breads. And then depending on what I've been making in the jam department, there's a lot of options there.
Yeah, that's true.
And I can do this while I'm still three quarters asleep, right?
That probably has a lot to do with breakfast. Yes, it does.
Because I don't have somebody getting up to make breakfast for me. I just kind of have to stumble in there and do it myself.
That's true. But we should be, thinking of things that are good for us because this is the thing that fuels our the rest of the day. So.
Well, the other thing I find after I've gotten through that first round with the coffee and the toast, then since it's not a heavy breakfast, I kind of get ready for lunch a little bit early.
Yeah.
Then one thing that I find good for a kind of breakfasty thing that we didn't talk about is smoothies.
Oh.
I often do, a yogurt or my homemade kefir base with some fruit, always a banana. Mm-hmm. And then you can throw in your whatever. I've been using hemp powder lately
latest
thing. But you can even put kale, a little bit of kale in. You get your greens in there, an apple. You can really load it up with high nutrition things, and it's all you drop it in the blender, you push the button, and there it is.
Now, see, I kind of I like smoothies, but I think of smoothies as like dessert later in the day. I need something to chew in the morning. I don't want something already pre-chewed
for me.
You know
how I think I got into this? Often put one of your raw eggs in because I know your eggs are really good.
But still, not for breakfast.
When I had kids and everybody was running out the door and you had to get some, or as a mother, you wanted to send them out with something nutritious in their stomach, you know, you just fill up you make the smoothie, you hand them the glass on the way out the door, and then you knew at least they had some protein, a few pieces of fruit, and they were off to a better start.
That's true.
I think that's how we got into that habit in our family.
I guess I like these textures in the morning, which is kind of like I like to try different kinds of breakfast cereal or crunchy things or things to chew
on.
You
must be more awake than me in the morning.
Well, after my coffee, I'm okay.
Oh.
Coffee first. And I recently bought the organic version of grape nuts from the local food co-op.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the checkout person, Ann, says, oh, my goodness, I've seen these. I say, what do they taste like? They taste just like grape nuts. They taste just like the box.
She looked at me and
I said, well, yeah, they just kind of taste cardboardy, but I do like the crunch. I put the crunch on other cereals.
I have to confess, I got this habit from my mother, okay? I did not invent this. I am big on, in the middle of the night, if I wake up and I can't sleep, I come down and have cereal.
Oh, your cereal in the night?
Cereal in the middle of the night.
See?
Something about the milk and the crunch and, And I often used to come down and catch my mother doing the same thing. Of course, she was eating Rice Krispies. That was her middle of the night. But I tend more towards the organic grape nuts. But
yeah.
Cereal
okay.
is cereal.
Yeah. We'll have a little bit more later in the show about breakfast cereal. But here's a quote from Michael Pollan about breakfast cereals. He says, don't eat breakfast cereals that change the color of your milk.
Good advice there.
Heaven knows what they put in all of that stuff.
Milk is, right. Unless you put chocolate in it, it's supposed to be white, right?
Right. This is KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. I do have a tune coming up here, and I mentioned I had biscuits and gravy for breakfast recently, and that's really good, and that's kind of what this tune is about. It's about biscuits.
So how many biscuits can you eat this morning?
This morning.
How many biscuits can you eat this evening?
This evening.
How many biscuits can you eat
for tonight?
That was a good tune called How Many Biscuits Can You Eat This Morning? And by a great old-time band called the Freight Hoppers. And that's from a long time ago. I got that CD, decades ago now, but I play it occasionally. I kind of defy you to listen to that tune and not at least smile a little bit. It's a
Tap
good thing.
Tap your feet, you know.
Yeah, it's a good thing to do for breakfast. We have been talking about breakfast, and I wanted to say a little bit about breakfast cereals. It's kind of a new invention, new as in the middle of the 19th century. There's a lot of cereal boxes on their breakfast
table. That's still kind of new in planetary feeding. Yeah.
It was part of a long-running battle in the 19th century between an unlikely set of combatants, vegetarians, water cure fanatics, and Seventh-day Adventists. Believe it or not, it was powered by a growing obsession with regulating bodily functions. At the time, way back when, most Americans ate a full English breakfast with meat and pork, and very low in fiber. And as a consequence, many people were very constipated and suffered painful gastric disorders. But
these were not the farmers who went out and moved around a lot.
Even people working in factories didn't run around as much as they used to. And all of this heavy stuff with no roughage was kind of having bad results. So this is the 19th century, so people kind of invent new things. The first person to come up with something here was somebody called Reverend Sylvester Graham. Oh, we got to have Graham crackers. Got to have cereal. And then he's looking for healthy things, so he comes on something like that. And then in 1858, there was someone named James Caleb Jackson came up with the first thing called granula, not granola, but granula, a hearty fast food made out of stone hard crumbs. You get people to eat this by, of course, telling them that it is good for you.
Okay, so does that mean that hippies did not invent crunchy granola?
No. This is health food.
Good.
And in Battle Creek, Michigan, the Seventh-day Adventists ran a health institute called the Battle Creek Sanitarium, where they tried the latest dietary fads.
I think there was a movie made about it, full-length feature that was quite fun, actually.
And Dr. John Harvey Kellogg was people would come to his spa there, and they'd live in a boarding house, and they had restricted to a vegetarian diet. And hungry young men, they needed breakfast cereal for all of the exercises that he put him through. So it started feeding him.
Yeah, this is not your hardworking
farmer showing up for this.
Yeah, right?
They come to clean out their systems. And he also came up with a granola sort of thing. But it really wasn't in 1893 in Denver, Dr. Henry D. Perky came up with something called shredded wheat, huh? These are great things.
This is the era of the beginning of processed foods.
They're processing this stuff. But, it was there, but people weren't really jumping on the bandwagon here.
Wasn't exactly attractive.
The man primarily responsible for feeding breakfast out into the grocery stores was Charles Post cereal.
And the Kellogg's.
He was a patient at the sanatorium there in Battle Creek, and he came. He came up with Postum, the coffee substitute, and he's the one that came up with grape nuts,
And Postum is made out of barley, so it's a grain beverage, caffeine free. I drank a lot of that as an old hippie.
Yeah, there you go. Mr. Post there did that. It wasn't until John Kellogg's younger brother, William, decided to call what they were producing cornflakes, and he really did a marketing job, convincing people that you don't want to cook for breakfast. You just want to set the kids down, pour some milk on this, and get them out the door. And it was Kellogg's that really took off as a brand.
Snap, Crackle, and Pop as a child?
I think that's Post, isn't it?
It's Rice Krispies, which is Kellogg's still.
Is Kellogg.
And then along came, of course, which we're still eating, Rice Krispie Treats.
It's important,
But the marketing was, so in the early 60s or maybe even the late 50s, they put those cartoon characters, the three guys, Snap, Crackle, and Pop, on the marketing.
Marketing. So despite their origins in the health food movement, breakfast cereals really have no special nutritional value beyond the food value of the grain they're made from. And mainly, it's the milk they're eaten with that provides most of the nutrients. So,
a little FYI, if you're still eating cereal, and I do from time to time, watch the sugar contents. They are, some of them have a much lower carbohydrate levels than others. So, you know, some of them are just like pure sugar. So be careful.
Yeah, yeah. We talk about omelets and putting things in omelets. Leeks are a good thing to put in omelets. Leeks.
Not in cereal, though.
No, not in cereal. Omelets.
Oh.
Omelets. Cereal.
I used to put ice, as a child, eat ice cream in my cereal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you're a lucky kid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my father was in the dairy business, so that's why it was permissible. But, yeah.
I was thinking about leeks because the fall garden is kind of winding down.
And we leeks in your eggs. That leeks, is a very good,
good
idea.
Leeks are good. I dipped back into the Donna Lana Kitchen archives here, and we have a little segment where Donna and I were talking about leeks because some people don't know what they are, but they're a good thing to eat. There's, in that family of onions, are leeks. Leeks, and again, that's something that does not look like you'd normally, people look at it and say, what is that, they say.
It's like an overgrown scallion, kind of.
Very long and
tall. Uh-huh.
But they come in all different sizes. I brought in a couple medium to little size ones.
And boy, are they beautiful.
They're long. They can get as big as baseball bats, and I'm not kidding. Yes, they can. And they're just as good as the little ones if you want to deal with that much all at once. But we have a recipe on the Donna Lana Kitchen website for leek and apple salad. And although leeks are usually cooked, again, sautéed or added to things, leek and onion soup, leeks, the tall green thing with the white stem, there's a recipe on the Donna Lana Kitchen recipe page for leek and apple salad. I got this recipe from a farmer's market customer ages ago. There, go for it.
So it's 1 pound of leeks. How many leeks would that be, sort of?
Two big ones or three or four little ones.
And then, of course, you only use the white part.
Yeah.
So you cut off all the green. Here's the problem with leeks that people, they, at the point between the white and the green, there's often some sand in them. So you kind of have to peel them down and fluff them. I cut them off between the green and the white, mm-hmm. and it's a kind of judgment call because some, you know, you want to get as much of the leek as you can, but you don't want the green part usually because it's a little bit chewy, right?
Mm-hmm. It is. But if you're cooking it, the green really is very edible.
Yeah.
But for this salad,
So you cut it off between the green and the white, and then on the white part, which is what you're going to use, I actually cut an X mm-hmm. in it, about an inch or two down.
Yeah.
And then I fluffle that under the running water, and the sand will just fall out.
Yes.
That's
right.
How you clean a leek.
Anyway.
So you cut the white part, and then 5 or 6 tart apples, and then the juice of 1 lemon, 1/4 cup of chopped walnuts, she says toast them for best taste, and 12 to 14 ounces of sour cream or yogurt, salt, and pepper. So you finely chop the white part of the leeks, you core and dice the apples, and you leave the skin on. So how small are you making the apples when you do this?
Quite small, because this is kind of a mixed together salad. You want, you know, I don't know, half inch, quarter inch squares.
Okay.
Quite small.
And
yeah.
Then the leeks must be cut
yeah,
quite small,
the,
too.
Yeah, about the
right.
Same. Small.
So then you've got toss in the bowl with lemon juice, stir in the nuts, salt, and pepper. Oh, and you put the sour cream in then, too. Everything goes into the bowl.
Yes.
And refrigerate at least 2 hours mm-hmm. before serving. So obviously the lemon juice would settle into the onions and the leeks and sort of temper them a little mm-hmm. bit. And the flavors kind of all mm-hmm. marry in the bowl, and then you eat it.
There it is. It's a good thing for a potluck, too.
Oh, it sounds really good.
And if you want to find that recipe, go to khoifm.org, find the Donna Lana Kitchen page. There's recipes there, and that one is there, too. Leeks are something that people stand in front of my farmer's market stand, and they say, what is that? And I say, that's a leek. And they say, what the heck is a leek? And I give them a little talk about what a leek is.
That is L-E-E-K.
Yeah, L-E-E-K.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had a really interesting experience a couple weeks ago when leeks were just starting, about 2-3 weeks ago now. Leeks, there was this nice older gentleman came up. He was wearing overalls, had a twinkle in his eye, and he said, "Ah, leeks," he said. Oh, so I figured I didn't have to explain to him. He says, he leans into me and he says, "So, do you know how to catch a fish with a leek?" he says. And I kind of hesitated and I said, "Sir, I'm from Wisconsin. I know that joke." And both of us, we both broke into this laugh that we shared this joke without even telling it. And considering we're talking about leeks, I will share.
Oh, you're going to tell us the leek joke.
Here, okay. I'm not.
Because we're not all from Wisconsin, so we don't all know the leek joke.
Right, right. It's a fisherman joke. And I've heard this now. And I probably won't tell this as good as my cousin Dave up there in Wisconsin, but I'll give it a try. Here goes. Now, this is how to catch a fish with a leek, but it only works for ice fishing, which is why they do it up in Wisconsin,
okay.
Ice fishing. So, you know, out there on the ice, you stand there, you're sitting there either on a bucket or you have a little tent over you to be warm. Okay, take 4 or 5 good leeks, depending on how big your hole is. You chop a hole in the ice. Lay the leeks around the hole so they're touching. There you go. And there you're sitting there looking.
So you like have a circle of leeks
around
the hole.
Okay. You know, ice fishing. And then, of course, because you're ice fishing in Wisconsin, you reach into your 5-gallon bucket and pull out your 6-pack. You gotta have beer along. And you
cold beer for ice fishing.
And it's on the ice. So you open that can of beer and you pour one whole can of beer down that hole. Huh?
Oh, my.
And then you wait a minute.
Ooh.
You wait. This ice fishing, you got to be patient. And then, when the fish comes up to take a leak, you grab them.
Okay.
That's the how to fish with the leak joke.
That's some good old Wisconsin humor. Okay, when the fish comes up to take a leak, you grab them.
Yeah, there you go. And it works too, by golly. Okay. There you go. So there, I hope you wrote that down because winter's coming. It might be a handy thing to know. There it is.
When the fish takes a leak. Oh, boy.
It does. You grab them. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. This is KHOI, and this is the Don Alana Kitchen. Find out more about this fine station at KHOIFM.org. There's a Don Alana Kitchen webpage there. Find out more about us and find out more about all the other good shows that are part of this fine community radio station. Welcome back. This is the Don Alana Kitchen. We're talking about breakfast today, but we'll take a little segue here. I don't think many people have beer for breakfast, but it's not unheard of. No, it's not.
Yeah, sometimes you got to do, what is it they used to say?
Hair of the dog.
Have a hair of the dog that bit you, right.
Well, another little bit. When you grew up in Wisconsin, you learn these things. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. But it is the time of, well, you know, Oktoberfest, and all of these nice different kind of beers are coming out, and people are kind of celebrating the harvest. I like to try different kinds. And I have a question for a person that I turn to often when I want to know about beer. Our engineer, Evan Taylor, knows these things. I had a beer, and it said it was a dunkel. What is a dunkel, Evan?
Okay, so a dunkel is a specific type of dark German lager.
A dark, okay.
Yeah, it's a dark lager. So, you know, it has a very light mouthfeel, light taste, but it has the roastiness of an ale in a lot of ways. Kind of like an amber ale, but maybe a little bit, again, lighter, cleaner a bit. So dunkel is actually a German word meaning dark. And these are beers that range in color from amber to a dark reddish brown. And they're definitely known for a smooth, just delicious, malty flavor that's really, really terrific. But usually pretty sessionable, kind of in that 4.5 to 5.5 or 6.5.
Sessionable?
Kind of.
Tell me what that means.
Okay, yeah. Sessionable is beer jargon for a type of beer that is usually an alcoholic percentage that you can drink a couple of in a sitting without, you know, you can have
so
a session.
So it's a little lighter in alcohol. Is that the idea?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
It's a beer that you can have a couple of without, like, being unsafe, let's say.
Like for breakfast. Sure.
Yeah, you know, I think that the beer for breakfast is definitely like a college student thing. I remember maybe a time or two that I had liquid breakfast.
Okay. Dunkel.
Well, nursing mothers were supposed to also drink...
Really?
Well, not dunkels. What's something that was supposed to be good for your mother's milk?
You're kidding.
No.
Really?
Interesting. Stouts, maybe.
Really? Like a milk stout, maybe.
Yeah. Something is supposed to be I think it's called a galactagog or galactagog. That means it produces milk in mothers.
Huh?
Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, how about that?
Yeah, I think you were encouraged to drink things like Guinness.
Huh?
Okay.
Uh-huh. For breakfast, even, maybe.
Breakfast champions, I guess.
I guess so.
Well, I don't know. What else do you want to know about dunkels?
That's good.
Dunkel.
That's
good. Dunkel, dunkel. Well, I like that word.
I like that word. And I did find that to be a very nice beer. Thank you, Evan. That's good.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Learn these things. Yes. Well, we are kind of moving into the end of summer here. I've got a little something to say about green tomatoes, and it's not your green tomatoes that are unripe. I love growing heirloom tomatoes, and the kind that are kind of really pretty, different colors. And there are a number of different tomatoes that are green.
Supposed to be green.
Supposed to be. They ripen green. My two favorites, and I've grown them for years, are Aunt Ruby's German Green and Green Zebra. And a number of years ago, Donna gave me a book called The Heirloom Tomato from Garden to Table. Beautiful pictures by Amy Goldman.
Right. That's somehow connected to Seed Savers.
Yeah.
I think she was their board of directors or something. It's a coffee table book. It's very pretty.
It is. But tomatoes being tomatoes, you kind of want to find out more about them. Aunt Ruby's German Green are the kind of tomato that are just big. It's a two-hander kind. They carry them in two hands from the garden, and they are green. They get kind of dusty, khaki colored when they're ready. You cut them open, and they're green. Some people just can't handle that. Shut your eyes and eat them. They're just the most tasty.
Pretty, like the green zebras, which are kind of a bright green.
Bright green.
If you cut yellow and green and red tomatoes in little bits, it's like a bowl of jewels. It's really pretty.
It is. I love Aunt Ruby's German Green, and I love green zebras. Oh, one thing about Aunt Ruby's German Green. You can tell things are changing. Boy, Central Iowa is just perking right up. A number of years ago, I couldn't sell that color of tomato for nothing. But
couldn't hardly give it away, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed this fall, a couple weeks ago, they were all lined up. They're in sale for the food co-op. I believe Lee's Greens Farm brought them in, and they were so pretty. They big things sitting bottom side up. So just regular folks in grocery stores can buy them now. Aunt Ruby's German Green. And that is a smaller one called Green Zebra, kind of a late season. And I do like that one. It's tart. It's small, kind of the size of, oh, ping pong ball, the tennis ball. They don't get big. And they are stripy. They are stripy.
And they are, I love the color on those.
Yeah. Those,
and that is not khaki green. It is bright.
Bright green. And they kind of stay firm. They're kind of a later season tomato, and I'm eating some of those even as we speak. Not as we speak. I had one for supper the other night. Originally, it was bred by Thomas P. Wagner. He was born in the mid-40s, and believe it or not, he started breeding tomatoes when he was 10 years old in Kansas. He just kind of fell in love with the
whole Kansas.
Yeah, they started
heirloom.
In Kansas,
huh.
Yes, and he wanted something. He just liked the challenge. He did. He found that, and there were green tomatoes around, but he wanted to see if he could get some stripes in it, and he started crossing things back. And there is, in this little story about the green zebra, he actually found his way to Iowa State University and the Ames Seed Lab, and they did some work with him there, and they shared some varieties. And now, this is not genetic engineering. This is just plain old
picking the seed that produces
breeding.
Keep growing that one out. This
breeding.
Is traditional plant breeding.
Yeah. And he worked, and he came up with the green zebra, and he was told by his dad and his grandpa, oh, nobody's going to buy that sort of thing. It looks too silly. But it's turned out to be a very, very popular tomato. And he's rather tickled that, although, I mean, they've been around for like 50 years or so. People talk about heirloom tomatoes.
I was going to say, that's probably a long-term investment.
Yeah,
there.
And he says, I don't know if it's heirloom or not. He says, I'm still alive, for goodness sakes. I'm not dead yet. But the tomato's been going on. And, And he's really glad that people like green zebras. Yes, green zebras. Donna, you had a news item from the Donalana Kitchen News Department. That's the ticker tape here.
This one actually comes from the Des Moines Register. I think it was, what was the date? Was it yesterday's? It's fairly recent. So the ISU agricultural economists have come up with some new numbers. The headline reads, Iowa Farming's $2.2 billion trade loss could ripple through the state economy.
Trade loss.
Yeah. So I get, you know, the deal is, since a lot of the agriculture in our state is aimed at producing exportable global commodities, like corn, ethanol, corn by itself and corn ethanol and soybeans and pigs, right?
Okay.
Those are our main farm-driven economies. And these are not grown just so people in the United States can have plenty of pork. It's, you know, morphed in the last 50 or 75 years into almost like a, you know, a natural resource, right? You know, as if we were sending coal all over the world or something else that we had mined. So since these things that we're growing in Iowa are globalized commodities, it puts our farmers at the mercy of all the international fluctuations in trade. And a lot of that is regulated by the federal government, not the state government, or not some guy calling you from California to buy your corn. It goes through international markets. So they have calculated with this new round of changes in trade.
The tariffs.
Yeah, the tariffs and the trade war, as it's called, with some of our biggest trading partners, which would be China and Canada particularly. Here are some of the projected impacts. The possible cut to state tax revenues could be as much as $110 million. That's not going to make us happy in terms of what we need for our public spending in terms of health care and education. This is not good. The economic impact on labor and reduced salaries could come to $364 million. The maximum losses to Iowa manufacturers, given higher costs for steel, aluminum, electronics, and other inputs, because they'll have to be paying higher import tariffs, could be another $348 million. The biggest tariff winner will be the aluminum steel producers here in Iowa that will get a $215 million boost. So this is not adding up. It says pork producers are likely to be the biggest ag losers.
Oh.
They stand to lose as much as $911 million. So These are not going to be happy times. We're already in a depressed commodities market. I'm sure everybody around here knows, but everybody knows somebody that's hurting from this. But here, this is the latest calculation, and it was in the Des Moines Register.
From the ISU.
Yep.
Ag economist. It's good to know these things. Yeah, it's good.
Well, you got to face facts here.
We are all dependent on what comes out of the ground, and farmers are a big part of our economy. There it goes. So let's keep our eye on that. Yes. Here, kind of to head back to thinking about breakfast again. Lewis Carroll has a famous quote, and I like his. Sometimes I believe as many as six impossible things before breakfast. Oh, six impossible things. How nice. And here is a Irish proverb that kind of should sum up eating a good breakfast first thing in the day. It's anonymous, but it does say it's an Irish proverb. Eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and dinner like a pauper.
Oh.
Well, we can try. We can try. So, there are some upcoming things happening. This week starts an event in Ames here called Maximum Ames.
Yeah, this is something we look forward to every year. It kind of goes on and on and on.
Lots of bands. Who would think so many bands?
All local musicians.
Can you tell us a little bit about Maximum Ames? Evan.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the eighth year of the Maximum Ames Music Festival, and it's going to be taking place at 12 different venues in and around the Main Street Cultural District here in downtown Ames. All over the place. And unlike previous years, where there's usually been kind of a headliner type major act from insert place here, majority of the acts are going to be either local or regional, with the furthest ones coming from, like, I don't know, Kansas City and Twin Cities and stuff like that. That said, there are going to be three shows that KHOI is hosting this year.
Right here in the studio.
Right here, sort of in the same space that we use for the Pantorium sessions. And all of those are going to be free and open to the public, as is our Praxis as a community radio station. So on Friday, starting at 7 p.m., KHOI is going to be hosting The Leftovers, Chase Schweitzer, and then Tom and Will, Tom Russell specifically, who is a producer of All Things Piano, a show that airs on Sundays on KHOI, and Will Pat, who is just a great all-around guy. Saturday from 7 p.m. to presumably 10 or 11. KHOI is going to be hosting Good Morning Midnight, a really fantastic indie group out of Iowa City, technically, I believe. Let's see who else. Good Saint Nathaniel, and then local band Morning Sex and the Goodweed, which was a band that Charlie Vestal used to belong to. And then finally, on Sunday, KHOI will be hosting the Flavor Basket Showcase, featuring an indie band with kind of a rotating lineup called Dear Rabbit. And that's going to be at 1 p.m.
Great. Great. For more information, look for Maximum Ames.
Yeah, there'll be a little something for everybody this weekend.
Yes, it is. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We've been talking about breakfast. Much depends on breakfast. Yes, it does. We visited the filling station for breakfast here in Ames. We talked about breakfast food and maybe beer for breakfast, and a leek joke. We learned about leeks through a leek joke. Yes, we did. We talked about some green tomatoes, dunkel beer. We cover a lot of things here. We have music by the Freight Hoppers, one of my favorite tunes. How many biscuits can you eat this morning? Thanks to the guys at the filling station for a dandy breakfast. Listen to the Donalana Kitchen Tuesdays at noon, live. We're here live. 7 p.m. repeated Tuesday evening. Go to the Donalana Kitchen website for recipe and archives at KHOI.
KFMO.org. Support this community radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prusintas.
Thanks for excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.
I love my wife and I love my baby this evening.
This evening.
I love my wife and I love my baby.
Love my biscuits.
I'm craving this morning.